Hi everyone, welcome. We're just going to give everyone a few minutes to join. Feel free to introduce yourselves in the chat, say who you are and where you're from. Okay. We'll give everyone 3 or 4 minutes to join. While people are joining, I'll just talk a little bit about AI for education. We were set up last year at the end of the year as a community to ensure universal benefit from AI. So our concern was that often when tech is developed, it's kids in low-income countries that are sort of left behind. So we're looking at how we can make sure that we include thinking about low-income countries in our development, and how we can encourage a community that works together, that collaborates, that makes sure that the interventions we make are evidence-based. So if we can go to the next slide, Ola, please. Now this is just a sort of vision statement, but the future we're working towards will see all children benefit from pedagogically sound, contextually relevant AI tools that work in local languages, tell stories that children can relate to, and continue to work even if internet is unavailable or the power goes down. And lots of these parts are sort of equally important. I mean, a lot of what's got it getting made is getting trained on what's on the internet, and the internet is sort of nearly entirely filled with English language content. A lot of the countries that we're working with have got many local languages, which maybe there's not enough resources. So we some of the pilot projects that we invest in are sort of looking at how to train models that understand local languages that can, for example, the last session we did last month with BookBot was looking at how to make voice AI software work with Ishihosa and Swahili. If you can go to the next slide, please. So we're working in various directions. We're producing guidance, knowledge projects, we're products, we're training governments. Sorry, my dog's going crazy. We're working with governments in low-income countries, we're working with NGOs, we're working to improve AI literacy through these events. We're also working to sort of build a community through these events. We're investing in research and development. Everything that we produce as part of this development, the evidence from these projects, the code will be made available for the community so that we can work collaboratively to solve for problems. We're also doing a huge amount of work with evidence, and that's collating evidence that exists, so other research projects that are going on, but also putting together the evidence from our own piloting and our own R&D. So more and more over time will become a sort of pool of evidence for the global community working on these solutions to see what's working and what's not, and to sort of come and discuss it. Something that we're just realizing now how complex it is, but we're making good progress, is looking at how to really benchmark whether the tools that are being made to help education are working. And that can mean, are they actually pedagogically accurate? But it can also mean, are they functioning? Are they working efficiently? So some of that's looking at sort of if a tool is designed to make a teacher's life easier, we want to have benchmarks that test whether it is helping the teacher to be more efficient. But also if the tool is designed to teach kids, we want to make sure that what it's teaching them is actually pedagogically correct. And the last phase of this is events like this, and connecting people and hoping that solutions are produced by connecting the community and by building the community. Next slide, please. So this is the last thing to go through. So we've been supporting 8 different organizations, two of whom have already come to talk to us. And today we're very pleased to welcome the Center for Integrated Solutions, Emmanuel Dorley, who's been developing, well, they've got a platform in Liberia that's officially endorsed by the Ministry of Education in Liberia. It's the endorsed solution for various schools there. And it's designed to help kids get through the WAEC exams, which are the West African Exam Council exams. And this is very interesting because it's probably about 3 million kids or more every year take these exams in Liberia, Sierra Leone, various other West African English-speaking countries. And some of the work we've been doing with CIS is to integrate sort of chatbots into their existing platform. And I'll hand over now to Emmanuel, who will tell you how this is going. Thanks very much.
All right, good morning, everyone. It's glad to see you all. Thank you for joining us today. As was stated, my name is Emmanuel Dorley, and today I will be telling you a little bit more about this work we've been doing and trying to prepare students for the WIAC exam. Let me go ahead and share my screen. We'll get started. All right, can you all see my screen? Okay, take that as a yes. All right, so this presentation is called Leveraging the Power of AI to Prepare Students for the WIAC exam. And this presentation will flow as follows. I'll begin with the introduction of CIS and the team that has been behind this. Talk to you a little bit about the problem we're trying to solve, what we thought the potential solution was. Get a little bit into the weeds on how we went about implementing this and discuss next step and then open it up for questions. This presentation is meant to be roughly 20 to 30 minutes and then really take the rest of that time to open it up for discussion. So as was stated earlier, I'm a part of the Center for Integrated Solution. And CIS is really a organization that develop evidence-based solution. And so what we're really interested in is how do we go about providing solution across education, health, and a number of different sectors in Africa. And specifically, we've been looking at Liberia, partly because both the founder and myself are Liberian, and quite a number of our staff are as well. The organization was founded in 2012, but wasn't registered until 2021. We're headquartered in Liberia, in Monrovia. And so as you can see, we've been around for over 10 years now doing this type of work in Liberia. And just to give you a sense of who's on the team, we have Asma, who is our CEO and co-founder, Varley as well. And when it comes to the development of this product and in many of the other technical pieces that we do, you have myself, who really serves as sort of a technical lead, providing guidance as well as managing a project. And then we have our developer, Nixon, as well as Suleiman, who have been an instrumental component in building this set software, testing it, and also helping us to deploy it in Liberia as well. And so this really encompasses the team. A little bit about my background. So I have my PhD in computer science with a focus in AI and education. And so I'm very much interested in how do we leverage AI agents to essentially support students. And so this project is really right up my alley in terms of what I do and where my interests lie. So as was stated earlier, WIAC is an exam that is administered in about five countries. And all of these countries are English-speaking, based in West Africa. And so WIAC stands for West Africa Examination Council, and they put on the exam. And so we typically just call it the WIAC exam. And so the exam is offered in 60 different subjects, but the core subjects being maths, English, science, and social studies. And so it encompasses math and English tends to be math and science tend to be universal, but when it comes to social studies, it really gets into the nature of issues in West Africa. There's a total of about 3 million students that take this exam every year across those five countries. So one of the reasons why we sort of started this is that there was a few years where we saw that students in Liberia have been performing quite poorly in the WIAC exam. And so, for example, I think there is some stats that show in 2012, only about 43% of students in Liberia took the exam and passed. And for us being Liberian, this is very disparaging news. And so we thought, how can we go about addressing this problem? Well, the first thing is, what's really causing this issue? Well, one of the things that you realize is that, as with many developing countries, there's quite a number of constraints. One of the issues you have in Liberia is that you have a lack of resources. And so many schools don't have the appropriate teachers as well as the textbooks to help the students learn. And so even if you're a good student, maybe you're able to find access to the materials, you may not have qualified teachers there. And you have this issue where quite a number of individuals sort of start schools, get these permits to run these schools, but don't have the necessary resources to really, operate a world-class institution. In addition to that, many schools don't have the budget to buy the necessary textbooks and the equipment needed. Not only are those issues prevalent, but due to the outbreak of Ebola, which followed the civil war that lasted over 10 years, and we're still sort of recovering from that, you sort of have all of these issues compounding to affect how students are able to prepare for exams. And not only that, but as we've seen with COVID and other economic factors, the economic situation there is also very dire. And so students need access to material that's cost effective, that is able to be easily accessible, and something that truly provides that support we see with many other students. And so one of the things that we know from the research in AI is that oftentimes technology has been shown to improve overall education outcome if you're able to leverage the data from students to address this. And so we thought, well, if there's been such a success with using AI in education and more developed, perhaps this could also have the same effect in Liberia. And so for example, we thought that because if you can't get the qualified teachers or the textbooks, maybe we can offer a online solution or a app-based solution that leverages AI agents to serve as a tutor as well as a guide for students. And then also, given that textbooks tend to cost quite a bit, perhaps we can leverage online resources or leverage a PDF version of these resources to give students access to this content through a content library. And the other thing that we thought the AI would really leverage is if we provide students a way to practice, then it naturally is going to reduce their anxiety because they've been exposed to the content, and they can practice as much as they want and get that feeling. So when they're going into the exam, it's not their first time seeing this. And we believe that by doing so, we can boost the pass rate and leverage this analytics to really drive what type of interventions are needed at the various schools. And so we think by leveraging AI, we can create this very data-driven approach to addressing the concerns with the pass rate of the WIAC exam. And so we developed this app called WIAC Lab. And so WIAC Lab really is meant to provide personalized support to students. And so as you go through these exercises, you get tailored feedback on what you did wrong. We provide you an opportunity to practice. So as long as you have this app on your phone or you have computer access, you can practice for as long as you need to. These exams we've made them very interactive by providing the chatbot that you can ask questions to at a very critical point in the process. And so one of the things that's really unique about this chatbot is it's not just sort of sitting there and waiting for you, right? The way it works is that as a student is completing an exam, and later on in this presentation, I'll get more in depth to how the entire chatbot worked. But at a high level, it's really looking at what questions you're getting wrong. And once you get a question wrong, you're able to ask it, what did I do wrong? And it allows you to sort of go back and forth with the agent, similar you as you would with a personalized tutor, to understand what it is that you were doing wrong. And as students complete these exercises, we're keeping track of their attempts, we're keeping track of their scores, and we know a bit, we have some demographic information about these students. And so we're able to leverage this data to really help the schools understand where their students are, as well as drive intervention that is necessary. And last but not least, as I stated earlier, really this helps to build confidence, because as students practice more, they don't go into the exams feeling as if this is something they've never seen before. And they can also work on bridging that gap in the knowledge they have and the knowledge they need to acquire. So how does this system actually work? And so in the application, students can begin to take a practice quiz. If they answer the questions, and they'll answer a question, right? If the answer is correct, we move on to the next question. So this ends this interaction with the chat bot. If the question is wrong, we go to the chat box for help. We ask the chat bot for help. The chat bot provides an explanation. If the explanation is good enough, we move to the next one. If it's not good enough, or if we want more detail, we keep prompting the chat bot. And so this conversation can go as long as the student needs it to go to be able to understand what exactly is happening as they're interacting with the system. So to give you a sense of how this works, let me just walk you through a simple example. So in this example, we have a student, they click on the biology, and so they get asked this question. And so here what you see is that, so the question is, what is the correct sequence of biological organization from the simplest to the most complex level? And so in this case, they've selected the right sequence, but in the wrong order. And so when they hit help, it takes a little while, and then the chat bar provides a response. Excuse me, I think something, 1 second. Here we go. All right, so now the chat bot provides a response after a little while. And that response says that essentially you've answered the question, but the order in which you placed the sequence was incorrect. And actually, would you like more explanation as to what happened? Sorry, for some reason this isn't. And so if you click yes, or if you say yes, please, it provides a more in-depth response to what occurred. And after we answer that question, we can move on to the next. And so as we answer these questions, it generates another prompt. So it clears this window and we're able to see an explanation as to why we got this wrong. Not only can students practice, but we also have a collection of the syllabus to allow students to understand what they need to cover in these different subjects, as well as students are able to see their scores and how many attempts they've made. And so the idea here is that we want to be able to give information to the students, and what we show here is very rudimentary. We do have another interface for the teachers to see a more in-depth explanation as to what's occurring with the students. And so as we continue to build this out, we may add more analytics. But the crux of this is that students can practice, you can look at content material, and you get to see a bit of statistics on how well you're doing on your practice. And so how does this system work? So we've built a system that leverages, for the front end, we're using React Native because we wanted something that could be built once and deployed to multiple platforms. We use Flask, Python, but for the back end, and the reason being is Python comes with a number of machine learning libraries out of the box and makes it easier for you to create and integrate these functions. We are using the most updated ChatGPT model, and we selected ChatGPT for a number of reasons, and we can get into it a bit more. But the crux is that we wanted something that was easy for developers to implement, as well as was a state-of-the-art model. And then last but not least, for our server, we have all of this built on AWS Elastic Beanstalk. And so collectively, this encompasses what our application is. So far, we've been able to develop, we've had the WIAC lab app developed for a couple years now. And so we've been able to integrate this chatbot that supports students' learning, but we are far from complete in terms of the ultimate product that we want to release. And so one of the first things we want to do is, one, we need to pilot test this with students. We've done some initial work, but we really want to sort of roll this out into a number of schools that we've partnered with to understand what is the value of this chatbot for students. The other thing that we want to do, as we described earlier, was that, you know, currently this relies on internet access. And so many of these students are going to be using this when they're at school, or, you know, those who have access to year-round internet. Now, you know, you may naturally be asking, well, why focus on internet enabled chatbot when Liberia has a lack of penetration in internet? And so what we were thinking is, initially, to pilot this, we want something that's easy to implement and doesn't require a lot of infrastructure or development. But as we move on, we're looking at edge computing solutions that allow us to create these offline models for us to be able to train this chatbot and deploy this chatbot in an offline environment. And last but not least, we want to be able to decrease the cost and reliance on open AI models. And so, you know, there's a number of open source models that have been released through systems or repositories for models such as Hugging Face that we can leverage. But in order for us to really be able to do that, we need to gather some data, as well as continue to train the necessary staff and the talent on ground to be able to implement this model. So that's it for now. I'm going to end here, and I'll open the floor to see if anybody has any questions. Thank you for listening.
Thanks very much, Emmanuel. We've got one hand raised ready from Oli. And if anyone else has got questions, please put your hands up and put them in the chat. Do you want to go for Oli?
Sure. Hi. Thanks, Emmanuel. That was really good. I have a couple of questions. So if I can ask more than one. So the first one's about in the demo that you showed, I was a little bit confused about the logical flow, because in the flowchart, it was like if they got the question wrong, then they could ask for help. But in the demo, it looked like you just asked for help before submitting the answer. And I wondered if I misunderstood that, or if it was different from the flowchart.
So here, right? You can't ask for help until you submitted an answer. And so in this case, the answer we submitted was wrong, and then we were able to ask for help. So you didn't ask for help before the question.
Ah, okay. So when you click on it, that's submitting it. Okay. I thought it was when you click like next, that was submitting it.
No. Okay. So, right. So here you start with the question just like this, right? I'm sorry. For some reason, I just can't seem to get this to click, right? But yeah, so you click on this question, right? And it tells you, essentially, the red indicate that it was wrong. And then this button pops up. So now that you've gotten it wrong, you can click for help. And so when you click for help, right, we prompt the chatbot to give you an initial explanation so that you have something to work from. And if that explanation isn't good, then you can continue to ask questions related to it.
Okay, thanks. I just misunderstood.
Yeah, no worries.
And then the other question was about when the help was provided. I was curious if is the LLM in that case using the materials that you have that the student can access in providing the answer, or is it just using knowledge that it has itself?
So for all of these questions, we have the correct answers indicated. And so what we do is, when we prompt the LLM, we pass it both the correct answer, the answer the student selected, as well as a prompt to have it, you know, act as a tutor, right? And so what it's doing is looking at your sort of the history of what you've asked, and then responding appropriately. So we're not just passing it the question and answer and say, hey, tell the students what they got wrong, but we're passing it the history of the chat so it can continue to build on the conversation that was started.
Thanks. Is there any, have you thought about using the syllabus material as part of that? Like in the, so you know how there was a part where the student could access the syllabus material? Having that as part of the input to the LLM and helping it to make the answer?
Yeah, so Yes, I think ultimately, if I'm understanding your questions correctly, what we want to do with the syllabus material is to sort of leverage this chatbot to maybe allow you to kind of go through the content better. We haven't really thought much into it. The idea here was you have students practicing, and at some point they're going to get a question wrong and they don't understand why, right? If you don't have the books and you don't have easy access to the internet, it's typically going to either take more data for you to try to find those correct answer, or may take a lot longer for you to sort of skim through your materials to understand why that's wrong. And so if we can sort of give you this on-demand tutor that can now answer those questions anytime you run into an issue, we think that that could be beneficial. Now, moving forward, ultimately we do want to integrate AI into other components of the app, whether it's that training. But we thought in this initial version should focus on providing support when the student got a answer wrong. But yes, I think even being able to generate syllabus materials automatically using generative AI, I think these are things that we can definitely incorporate down the line.
Thanks. So I think just like what I was meaning was more like when it's providing the feedback, like when they say help, like if the material could be used in the prompts for helping to make the answer for like I wasn't sure if that was being done.
I see. So yeah, no, we're not using syllabus specific material just yet. And the reason being is when we try to look at the difference between, let's say, a RAG model and a standard approach, and we found that for a lot of this content, many of these larger models have that information available. And if you think about math, science, and English, for example, it's not going to change that much across the globe in terms of what you add. It's the social science that is a bit more specific to West Africa, but the content is not so detailed. Now, what we recognize is when it comes to more broadly a broad historic material or more specific to Liberia, it does become a problem. And I think we need to explore RAG approaches to embedding that information in there. But more broadly, when it comes to the sciences, the maths, general models without embedding or infusing any of your specific data seem to work very well.
Yeah, I guess the one thing I suppose is that it could like provide suggestions, like so like links to the material. I guess that's one way that that could be adding more above and beyond like the knowledge that the material has. But yeah, thanks.
No, thank you for, I think no, those are good questions.
Yes, Torrance, so do you want to go ahead? Me? Thank you. Super interesting, and thank you again for the presentation. I'm coming from UNICEF, so this is definitely an application of interest for us, and we have a lot of similar questions. I guess for one of the main things that we're debating internally is around the safety of these systems. So ensuring accuracy, preventing hallucination, and also ensuring that students are staying on topic and maybe not using the system for purposes for which it wasn't intended. And I was kind of interested in how you're both evaluating performance and checking for those kind of safety concerns, and whether you're disclosing the use of generative AI to students and like how their data is being used with respect to teachers. Sorry, again, a bundle of questions, but these are all ones that we think a lot about in our own applications. Thank you.
Yes. So one of the things, so there's this new metric that was proposed not too long ago called factual consistency. And so it ranks these models based on who has the most factual consistent responses. And so we use that to select which models will be more appropriate. And what we try to do is in these prompts is prompt the agent to sort of act as this tutor and not to respond based off of content that's not available or that's not within his wheelhouse, or if the content doesn't deviate from that. However, I think there is more we need to do in terms of addressing hallucination beyond those sort of prompting method. And I think as we move into a more RAG approach where we're infusing our own data into this content, I think that would help address some of that. But from the initial study we've done, we haven't seen, because we're using these more factually accurate models, it doesn't seem to be a huge issue. But we haven't had a lot of cases of students maybe trying to break the system. So I think as we put it out there, that those are going to be some concerns that we have. This version with the chatbot hasn't been released yet, but I think the point that you're making is something that we will include a statement to just indicate that there is AI being used there. In terms of the student data, so we try to one just keep it on a secure server. We use AWS for all of that, and then but we in terms of the information we collect from students. There's none of that. The student's data is being fed to the LLM. We try to make sure of that. It's just what you answered and sort of what questions you asked. Now, it is possible that a student could put their information through the questions they ask. But yeah, that's something to consider. But at this point, we try not to. We're very careful what information we're sending about students to these models.
And just out of curiosity, have you sort of figured out a protocol for like ongoing monitoring of the system performance? So like as the students are using it, checking what kind of responses they're getting and looking for ways to improve or building some sort of feedback loop in?
We are keeping track of those responses. We haven't fully decided what we're gonna do just yet or how we're gonna try to improve it. But yes, that is the plan. So as we deploy this to students and we're sort of tracking that data, I think that'll give us some insight.
Thanks a lot. Super interesting.
If I may just add up to what Emmanuel said. My name is Valis and I'm the founder of GIS. Thank you, Oliver and Catherine, for your comment. I think just gonna piggyback on Catherine's comment. As Emmanuel said, and as our guy said initially, we had an existing system, which is the WASLab platform, and now we are integrating AI chatbot into that as an instructional support system. So for the WASLab and AI, the AI is kind of like a little bit separate from that because we want to make sure that we're protecting student data, all of that. But before students enroll on our platform, we sign an MOU with the parent because we know that most of the students are under 18, and so we need some consent from the parents. We engage the schools, we sign an MOU, and in that MOU, we describe exactly what the platform does and what type of data we're collecting. And mostly, it's just the parents' phone numbers and the contact number of the parent or like the student phone number that we use for just basically for login. There is no data other than like birth dates, other that we don't collect on any of those data. Just your phone number to kind of like use that as a way of resetting your password and accessing the platform. That's the first part. And in terms of some of the learning that we are doing, even though, as Emmanuel said, we've not released the AI part of it yet, but we are using the platform, the WASLab platform, based on student performance data. We are using that to kind of provide feedback to the schools to show that, hey, this student needs more support in history, this student needs more support in mathematics. We are going to be going to the more granular data to show that specifically this student needs help support in mathematics, specifically in geometric equation, in algebraic equation, going to the topic level as well. That's the next phase of our data reporting. And another interesting part about this is that we are going to be providing support to our data to the Ministry of Education, which has kind of like come to us for support in terms of generating data in areas of topics and questions that are the student that the student are kind of performing their best in as well. And that data will kind of serve to generate curriculum, to improve the curriculum and enhance some of the questions that come on the exam as well. So like there is a lot of potential in what we are trying to do. And even though we are like at a like a pretty much early start of it, but again, just to indicate that 2.1 is that the platform is kind of a little bit separate from the AI component of it, which comes in as a substitute teacher in a way. And the student data are kind of like a little bit separate from how we interact from both sides as well. I don't know whether that makes that answers the question, Catherine.
No, that's super useful. Again, I think we're in a lot of the same situation where we have a platform and then we're trying to add this AI enhancement. And it's just having funny conversations about how to explain that. And I was talking to somebody saying, like, they introduced themselves as a study robot, but then people are asking all these random questions, like, can you give me the phone number of a football player? Do you know him personally? Like, so just getting cl students clear on what the system is doing. And yeah, thank you, though.
Absolutely.
That's helpful.
Absolutely.
George, did you want to go ahead with your question?
Yes. Hi. So I'm the CEO of Kwame AI, and we actually have a similar platform to support WASI students in Ghana. So basically helping them prepare for it. And the number of challenges that we're grappling with, and I'm just curious to hear about your thoughts on how you're dealing with similar challenges in Liberia. So one was, I was going to ask about the hallucination bit, so that has already been addressed. But the other bit that I was going to ask about, so one challenge that we have in Ghana is that the students that take the WASI at the senior high school level are mostly boarding schools. So they don't really have, and boarding schools in Ghana, they're not allowed to have access to phones or devices. So that's been like one key challenge with reference to even deploying like AI powered tutor to students to have access to prepare. So that's one challenge that we have, and I was curious about how it is in Liberia. And related to that, I was also curious about your thoughts on whether or not, or I guess how there's a potential of a tool like this to actually increase the inequity, right? Because the students that have access to devices, right, would be able to have access to an AI tutor like this at home, whereas the students that don't really have access, who might actually need the support, wouldn't get that. So how are you grappling with some of these challenges with the deployment of your tool?
I can start and you can add on to that. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, I think those are really excellent questions. And I will kind of like start with the access to devices for boarding school students. So I think one of the biggest progress, you know, like one of the biggest advanced achievement that we had with WASLAB from the onset was getting the endorsement of the Ministry of Education, because we knew that was very important, right? Nobody trusts any platform that is not endorsed by the Ministry of Education. So otherwise, you're just going to be engaging with individual schools, and it's going to be a challenge. So by getting the blessing of the ministry and releasing a public notice all over the country saying that, and releasing it to all of the various education officers across the counties, and saying that a WASLAB is a generally approved platform for preparing students for WAEC exam, that alone built trust in our platform. That was one of the biggest progress that we made, right? So, and that really took some time. We had to do a lot of demo, how to engage with the ministry, you know, showcase, build confidence in the system as well. So once we did that, now what schools are doing, and now we are engaging individual schools, and because there is already trust in the system, the schools, most schools don't allow students to kind of, the students take their phones to schools, but they don't use it during school period. So now what the schools are doing is that, you know, like during a certain period of the day, they allow students to bring out their phones and practice the exam during school time. Or like even there are a couple of schools that have already started integrating WASLAB into their academic curriculum. So every, I think once or twice a week, they have WASLAB almost like a period within the school day. So they have 1 hour allocated on Tuesday and Thursday just for WASLAB. And during that time, they will kind of go into their computer labs for you know, and practice. And then students kind of use their computers or their phones to kind of practice as well. So that is one of the, you know, that is one of the ways that we have really addressed that area, that issue of access to device and making sure that the students are preparing with support from the teachers. Now, we are also very much aware of the inequities or the inequality in access to resources. And I think, as Emmanuel said, the first thing we're looking at to do is make sure that we have an offline version, because we know that generally not every part of Liberia has or internet or mobile coverage. So by having an offline version, that will really help to kind of, you know, like address the higher level inequity. But also the second part is we are very much working along with the Ministry of Education to make sure that WASLAB becomes integrated into the national curriculum. And that way we can kind of directly integrate that into the public school systems as well, where resources are limited, but also once they can kind of integrate that into the national curriculum and the public school system, we can leverage we can engage with donors to kind of provide the opportunity and the facility to kind of, you know, like make sure that those students that are within the public school system who are technically considered the ones with the limited resources, they can also kind of access WASLAB as well. We have made great advancement in that, being that one of the biggest public school systems in Liberia is called the Monrovia Consolidated School System, which is within the capital Monrovia, but has the largest public school students in Liberia. The mayor of Monrovia, who is the chair of the board of MCSS, he has already accepted the kind of like integrate WASLAB beginning next school year. So what that means is that we are going to be piloting WASLAB into the largest public school system in Liberia. But again, integrating that is just the beginning, because the resources will be kind of integrated, but the resources might not be available. So the donor is also going to be, and that's one of the questions that even like Ola and when I met with you, Maya, the last time, were like whether there is an opportunity for additional support to make sure that we are rolling this out as well. Because the mayor now, as part of that, he will want to work with CIS to make sure that we are generating resources to make sure that you know, like all of the students within the public school system have access to a WAS lab by whether it's you know, like maybe getting them additional computers or you know, like a tablet to practice during school time as well. So these are some of the little steps that we are making, but again, it will take some time. But yeah, we are very intentional about it, and we are very much aware of some of these challenges. George, I don't know whether that answers the question.
Yeah, and to add to the technical front too, one of the big pushes in large language models is running these tiny models or finding ways to compress them to run them on mobile devices as well as offline devices. And so we're exploring that as a potential option. So maybe, you know, if at a school, for example, you can have one of these models running locally on a local network where students can access it, right? Or we can sort of compress a larger model to run on a mobile device so that we don't have to worry about online access. Because if you can create a model that's a few, you know, gigabytes, I think most schools or most phones tend to have a decent amount of storage for you to be able to run these locally. And so I think by us doing that, we can be able to provide access. Now, granted, at some level, you know, if they don't have, you know, a certain type of phone, that does still present a challenge. But I think, you know, that sort of gets into trying to address that last mile. And we don't necessarily have the right solution just yet. But we think at least if you start to roll it out, you get the support. I know in Liberia, you have some of these GSM companies like Orange. There's a way you can partner with them where they offer free access to your application for students or for nonprofits. So that could be another way of sort of rolling this out in a way that's equitable as well.
As you were speaking, something just came to mind. So we, about the offline models, so my organization, we ran a hackathon this year to crowdsource basically AI-powered solutions to help students in Ghana prepare for this national science competition. And some of the three solutions that we picked, they built some tools with offline models that kind of provided explanation to students after they got certain questions wrong. So I could connect and share some of links to the open source tools that they built, which maybe you can leverage in the tools they are building too.
Yeah, no, that would be amazing. And I'm also a part of the AI Ed community, so I've been watching some of the workshops you all have hosted, so definitely.
Amy, do you want to go ahead?
I see Amy's hands up there.
Thanks, Emmanuel. That was super interesting. And it's exciting to hear your work with the ministry as well, like informing the curriculum and yeah, it looks like a great tool. I just wanted to ask about if you've done any thinking around the way that the tutor works and sort of, you know, the way that it interacts with the learner. I think the example you gave, it sort of explained the right answer, but there's obviously different ways where it could be proactive with asking questions or like do more sort of walking, you know, the learner through the different steps in the problem to help them kind of come to the right answer. I just wondered if you'd done any thinking around that and testing which would be most effective.
Yeah, we haven't done a lot of that in terms of, you know, we've looked at a few prompts that we thought would generate the right responses, but we haven't done sort of that thorough deep dive of sort of leveraging, you know, maybe some education theory to see which prompt is most appropriate. Well, not the most appropriate, but most effective. And so I think in this next phase, that's what we want to do is sort of let the, you know, this initial pilot inform us from the student's perspective, what are some of the questions they're asking? What is the flow that we're seeing with the way in which students respond, and then, you know, move to that. But I think that's a great next step for us to consider. I think this first version where we were sort of looking at was just laying that foundation, selecting which model made the more sense, and testing some general prompts that would give us the right responses. But we haven't gotten, well, that would give us some good responses, but we haven't really gotten into the granular comparing different approaches.
Cool, thanks. Yeah, sounds good. Sounds like a good progression.
Thank you.
If there are no other questions, actually, I had one or two questions for Emmanuel. It's interesting to see. I mean, at the moment, you guys are kind of very much focused on exam preparation, and it seems like the starting point is you've got the existing questions, historic questions, and you can kind of go from there. But what sort of if you were to go forward sort of 5 years, how else do you at which other points of the curriculum do you imagine you intersecting? Would it just be exam preparation, or would the sort of solutions you're making be applied to other stages of students' learning journeys?
Yeah, I'll start, and then Varley, feel free to come in. I think from the technology perspective, what I think we really want to do here is essentially integrate these AI approaches to a variety of spaces, both the classroom day-to-day learning, right, the after-school learning, as well as the exam prep. We began with exam prep because the way we sort of saw this is, you know, anytime you're releasing new tools, methods, or anything into an environment like Liberia, you want that support, and you want to be tackling a pressing issue so that people start to see what you can do. And so because the exams were a pressing issue when we were considering this, we thought that could be a nice way of you know, generating some visibility and sort of getting our foot in the door to start doing work with students. But ultimately, we want to be able to, one, you know, boost the overall just STEM graduates in the country. Two, we want to be able to solve some fundamental learning challenges, such as, you know, preparation and reading, math, and all of these things, because we see it as, you know, a great way of, you know, providing a foundation for the nation. And then the other thing that's you know, really unique that we want to get into is language learning of the local languages in Liberia, as well as sort of, you know, the history and all of that. And so ultimately, we want to build this into a system that is able to provide personalized learning across, you know, the spectrum. But we started with test prep because I think that's something that students can do for a set period of time. We can see some results, and we can make our case for how technology can be leveraged. But ultimately, we do want to get into a number of those different spaces. And I think, as Varley indicated, you know, building those relationships is essentially two for us to be able to do that. So I'll hand it over to Varley.
No, I think that's a really good question, Guy. One of the things that we already started, but we kind of like had a have a pause because there was a change in administration, the past government, you know, like that lost the election, and we had a kind of like with most West African country or like most developing country, had to kind of like a re-engage the new administration again. So we started that. But what we are trying to do is the government has a national textbook. So that's why we have already started integrating that the textbook into the WASLAB platform before there was a change in administration, and that did not come to a completion. But that is the major next step, because if we can, you know, integrate that an electronic version of the textbook onto the platform, that becomes an additional resource for students who don't have access to the textbook. Because again, there are like of all of the 50,000 students that take the exams every year in Liberia, in the 12th grade level, they only had about 1,000 textbooks for all those 50,000 students. So what we told the ministry was that we want to kind of integrate the textbook into the WASLAB platform so that I can kind of like give access to every student in Liberia, regardless of having access to the physical textbook. So that was one of the first things that we are doing. So once we integrate that, we can kind of find a way with Emmanuel, that's Emmanuel, the department, to make sure that we can kind of maybe connect the learning model to that textbook to kind of really connect some of the answers and all of that. But that's something that I don't have much information on. Emmanuel kind of take care of that. I think another part of it is, which again, I went to school in Liberia, just like Emmanuel and almost all of our team members, we realized that our students who sit the national exam, they are not prepared in a way that is very intentional. For example, the general test and quiz that they do in the classroom are not similar to the national exam or the WAEC exam. So what we are trying to do is, for students who are taking a national exam, their exam structure should kind of mirror exactly the WAEC exam. So regardless of just preparing for WAEC in general, once you are preparing for WISE, you should kind of like all of your quizzes and regular classroom activities should be based on how the WISE exam is administered. So that way, while that is preparing, is giving the resources for you, but also in the classroom, you are already being prepared in a way that is very intentional and well, and like a prepared for the exam as well. So some of those quiz models, some of those testing and the structure of the testing that are being done by the teachers will be informed by WASP Lab platform as well. So again, that's why yesterday I was telling you guys that we'll also kind of, you know, develop some resources for the teachers. But that's one of the requests that has come to us, to kind of develop resources for teachers so that they can also kind of structure their questions in the classroom based on how the WISE exams are structured as well.
Fantastic. So basically, seeing the platform as part of a way of actually making sure content gets to the right people.
That's right. Yes.
That makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Yes.
Sorry, I can see there's a couple other questions. So I'll pass over to who is the next one? Catherine
and Jay.
Yeah, actually, sorry, just to follow up directly on that question. In my understanding, one of the challenges is actually it's hard to get access to practice exam questions for those exams. So I was going to ask how you actually got the questions that you're using in the platform. Was it difficult, or where you sourced them? Yeah,
that's a good question. Yes. So when we got the endorsement from the ministry, the National WISE Office works directly under the supervision of the minister, of the deputy minister for instruction. So when we got the endorsement, they were mandated to kind of like provide every resource to WISE Lab. So basically, we go to them to give us all of the past questions. And with the WISE, and I think Josh Boateng knows this better also, WISE generally draws that question based on the last 5 years. So that's where, you know, like we get those past questions from. So we have access to all of those past questions from them as well. And because of that endorsement from the ministry.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Sorry, just to butt in. Oh no, hang on. There's one more question waiting, so I'll go afterwards. Who was next? I can't see the hand anymore.
Yeah, that's S.
Oh, Jay.
Yeah.
Thanks for your presentation, and I think that makes absolutely sense and is very, very vital based on the research you've done. And what I really want to understand, because I'm from Sierra Leone. And most of the cases that you mentioned has to do with the ministry and also in partnering, you know, how you support in other schools for students to do well in their exams. So I was going to ask if this research, if you have any partners that are actually working on this in other parts of the country besides Nigeria. And I didn't hear anything like Sierra Leone being mentioned. And I want to know if these opportunities, like having this data being collected and support students besides just being in their classrooms, but they can also, if they have devices in at home or they have opportunity after school session to work in their computer rooms, that is very, very vital. I want to know if you have that in place for Sierra Leone to kickstart.
Yeah, I think there are two or three questions in there. So the first part is, right now, as you know, Jay, WISE exam is, even though they are West Africa based, but the questions are very generic, you know, like a contextual to the country. And like as Emmanuel said, there are some subjects that they have the same questions across all countries, but there are some subjects like history, geography, those questions are drawn based on the country context. So being that we are starting with Liberia for now, we don't have content for Sierra Leone based on that, but if it is like the sciences and mathematics, everybody can kind of use that. So, you know, any student from Sierra Leone can kind of, you know, like have access to that, even though, again, we are not, based on our subscription model, we are not enrolling anyone outside of Liberia, but that's something I'll be more than happy to work with you if you are interested in integrating this into Sierra Leone as well. On the second part of students having access to the devices when they are out of school, yes. That's why when I explain that, when we are doing the enrollment, we get a contact of the parents as well to make sure that they understand that this is an additional learning resource for their children when they are home. So parents can kind of, you know, you have their own account as well to work with their kids and prepare them while they are out of school as well to make sure that when they are on their phone, they know that they are actually working on something that is school related and not some social media platform as well. So we do have a space where you can kind of access WISE Lab out of school as well. I don't know whether that answers the question, Jay.
Yeah, it's well understood. Thank you for explaining the question. Thank you.
Sure.
Vali and Emmanuel, so if no one, oh yeah, I'll only ask questions if there are no others from the group. So I can see that George voting can go next.
Just another follow-up. So just putting on my entrepreneur hat on, I was just curious, how is this being funded? Is it like available to students for free? Is it like nonprofit? Is it, yeah.
Great question. So we built a platform out of pocket. It was a CIS initiative when we built Wasla. We invested a significant amount of resources, personal from our own, and of course we are a new organization. So we had a kind of deep in the pockets of the founder and other members, and most of our staff, including a lot of them, our project manager, our project coordinator, and our developers, they are all on platform right now. So thanks to them, they are all volunteers. So that's how we build a platform. So when we build a platform, we initially intended to kind of like make a subscription base. We charge a very limited amount based on the economic situation in Liberia. But we realized that that became a challenge in accessing the platform. So what we are trying to do now is to kind of engage with the ministry to see how we can engage donors and other partners to maybe just provide resources that can make the platform open source to every student in Liberia. So that will be the second phase of it right now. But as we stand right now, we are charging very minimal. I think it's around like less than $3 for the entire year. So, but again, it's just going to make sure that the platform is up and being updated, and also keeping paying for the cost of the server and our system upgrade as well. But the long-term and the most sustainable and desired way, which is very passionate to Emmanuel as well, is to make sure that we don't charge any amount for WASLAB and make sure that it's open to every student in Liberia, which is something that we are hoping to achieve in the coming year.
Okay, so maybe just to clarify, is it being paid for by schools or parents?
So when we sign an MOU with the schools, the parents are part of that, because we kind of go to the PTA meetings, we meet with the parents, say this is what the platform does, and the parents agree to enroll their kids on the order that, and based on that, they pay to the schools, and the school pay to CIS.
Okay, thanks. And maybe just a bit related to that, you mentioned about the access to the past questions. I was curious about how you handle the copyright issue with reference to, you said you're able to get the past questions after you got the endorsement, but were there any copyright concerns from WAEC in terms of maybe being able to use it and maybe having to pay them for usage? I'm asking because we've also had to deal with this issue.
No, absolutely. Yeah, before we got an endorsement, we engaged WAEC initially, and they said we should pay them to get the questions. So because they were charging us really high. So because of that, luckily we went to the ministry and they gave us the endorsement, and that gave us access to the full database. So now we don't have to pay WAEC to get past questions from them. But yes, it was something that they told us we're gonna pay them, and it was very significant. We couldn't, because we didn't have any resource. So luckily the endorsement kind of cleared that barrier for us. I know that there are a few questions. Emmanuel, I don't know about you. I can kind of stay up for another 10 minutes or so. Emmanuel, I don't know about you, but I want to make sure that we answer as many questions as possible.
If you've got time for one more from me, Vali. Just now that we're talking about sort of costs and I thought I'd just ask more generally, where do you sort of see broadly the barriers that make life difficult for you, and where you think funders or ministries could do more to sort of help break down those barriers and make life easier to sort of get the platform to where you imagine it being? So, I mean, yeah, cost being one of them, or who pays, for example, might be one, but I'm curious to know what other barriers you perceive that you think we should be working to remove.
No, I think I think basically, when we started Wasla and Emmanuel, he being the lead, one of the lead, the lead developer on the platform, he was very passionate that he doesn't want Wasla to be a charge. It should be free of charge, and that's something that we are really working towards. And what we've seen also is students are very interested in a platform, but the cost of paying for it or that is something that they cannot and again, even the schools, when we say the schools are hey, get on a platform, this is a cost for it. Once you say, oh, they're like, yes, we want to get on it, but there's a cost to kind of ask parents for extra during the school year. It's a challenge for them as well. So I think
if we can kind of, you know, like a half, like the cost of running WASLAP on an annual basis covered, which is something that we'll be more than happy to run in numbers and give to any donor, that will kind of, you know, just open it up, and that will kind of, you know, like really allow us to kind of, you know, like a really upgrade the system and roll it out across the entire country as well. I think that's the first part of it, really allowing us to kind of, you know, like a really provide a minimum cost of operating the platform and running it. The second part is the access. And we had started working with our various stakeholders, including the GSM companies, to really allow access to WASLAP free of charge, so that students who are IBA accessing it do not have to pay for internet. And some of those discussions have already been advancing. So the internet providers, the telecommunication company, they were all willing. They even said that two of them said that if we were going to have our own servers into, you know, embedded into that system, so that way, whenever someone is accessing WASLAP, it will just get routed to that server, so that they don't have to pay for it as well. So all we had to do was get a server and set it up in their system, in their server room, and they can kind of just, you know, like a route all communication to WASLAP on that, so that anyone on WASLAP would not be using internet to, you know, like do not need to kind of pay for internet to access WASLAP. I think that's the second part of it, and the third part is really, as Emmanuel talked about, you know, like a really rolling out that offline platform. And as part of that, we may kind of need some digital gadget, you know, like a for practice exam in public school systems as well. So I think broadly thinking, those are three high level areas that I can kind of think about right now. Emmanuel, I don't know what you think.
I think the other thing that would be very critical is the training of people locally. So if you look at Liberia, for example, there's no AI courses being offered at the universities, high schools, none of that. And we want to be very intentional of maintaining the expertise in the country. And so part of what I'm very interested in is developing more Liberians who understand AI and who can contribute to the development. Because I think historically there's been a model where a product is built outside of Africa and you deploy it in the country and the locals help maintain it, but they're already maintaining something that's been built. And so either A, sometimes they don't have the expertise to really change it, or B, you know, they just stay on that maintenance side. And I think we lose a lot of that local contextual knowledge. And so we want to be very intentional of keeping local developers involved. You know, for me, I'm based in the US, but I go back to Liberia quite frequently. But I think there's just things that, you know, as we see, as generations change, there's a nuance that we may be missing if the people who are on ground, who have that experience, more recent experience with the exam, aren't in the development of the software. And so another component is really, how do we upskill a workforce that can support the development and support, you know, the deployment of the system?
And so for you, I suppose when you talk about AI literacy, there's one implication, as you say, is having the developers within country, right? So having Liberian developers, and I guess another aspect of that is that having literacy amongst teachers, parents, students about how to sort of use these solutions and when, what they can and can't do and what the limitations are. And
absolutely. And I mean, if you look at a lot of these AR courses, they're all behind these paywalls that cost quite a lot, right? Like if you look at a Coursera or some of these systems, you need a debit card to pay for it, or, you know, you need a large amount of internet credit to be able to even complete some of these courses. And so just being able to provide that support, because I think even if, you know, you bring the sort of teachers and students in to understand what AI is, but I think having that local development talent will also help you explain what this technology is, right? And I think there's this sense that sometimes when you develop these and deploy it in a country, where the fear comes in is that, one, nobody knows what it is or how to use it. Two, you know, anytime we have somebody come in to fix or use it, they look different from us. And then three, when we want to see something that we think is important and reflected in the software, we can't. And so that's when it feels like a foreign device in many ways, right? And so I think, yes, part of that education is having trained people who can explain it, show demos of what this technology can do, and help ease that stress of, hey, you know, this is another, you know, powerful Western technology being dictated to us, rather than, you know, hey, we're all involved in this co-design of this technology.
No, very interesting. And of course, the local content. So the local presentation of the content, the local teaching of it, local literacy teaching, but also understanding local languages, local context, local stories is very important, I think.
Yeah, and separate to this, so a lot of my research is in leveraging AI for education, and one of the projects that I'm pursuing is being able to do English to Pele translation, and then looking at some of the local dialects as well, as a way of just creating more Liberia-centered AI solution, and then seeing how we can integrate it into these type of platform. Because I think, yeah, the local stories, the local, even a local accent or the local variation of English, right? Being able to bring that into the technology, I think will really make people feel like, man, this was built for us, you know. But and I think more broadly, if we can get this to work in the Liberia context, many of these personalization can also scale to other countries as well.
Just out of curiosity, Emmanuel, what's the language scenario in Liberia like? What's the percentage of English spoken as a mother tongue, for example?
So because Liberia was formed by African Americans that came back, English is the largest language spoken. It's the official language of the country. The exact percentage, I wouldn't know off the top, but I think it's a large percentage of the population, at least in the more urban areas, speak English. But then you have 16 different tribes. The largest tribe is the Pele tribe. And so that's why even with this English, Liberian language translation, we're sort of starting there and then, you know, scaling down based on availability of data. But yeah, there's still English, but oftentimes we speak a variation with an accent. And so even being able to, you know, capture that might be an interesting way of engaging students.
Yeah. That's more like the pidgin version of English, you know, in Nigeria, or like what is it called, in Sierra Leone, how do you call it? I forgot.
Creole.
Yes, yeah. The Creole bridge. Yes, exactly. So we call it colloquial. So that's, you know, like it's like a broken version, but localized version of English, and that is the one that is spoken across 100% of the country. But professional English or and like, you know, standard English is something that that is more urban and peri-urban areas, and then in addition to the 16 tribes, of course.
Fantastic. Well, I'd just like to go out to the floor and see if there's any more questions from our guests, and to thank everyone for joining us today. It's we're very grateful for you to take part in the community, and thank you so much to Ivali and Emmanuel for sharing their progress. If there's any more questions, if not, I think we've gone over time. So thanks everyone for staying with us. The video of this will go up live soon. Feel free to get in touch with us if there's follow ups you want or something you've missed, or if you want to be sort of introduced to each other, if you've met someone interesting on the session who you'd like to kind of continue contact with, feel free to come through us and we'll try and help you out.
Thanks so much, everybody. And thanks so much, Emmanuel, for really leading us in through this process, and to the team, Apledo, Zach, Suleiman, you know, Asma, you know, Zuleika, Masa, thank you so much for all joining. Again, you know, this is really, really good to kind of, you know, share the stories of CIS and WAS Lab in Liberia. And we look forward to all of your support and partnership to make sure that, you know, like we are really achieving our vision and our goal for WAS Lab in Liberia. And of course, making sure that Liberia students have, utilizing AI in the best way possible. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much, guys. Bye, everyone.
Bye.